Well, we got a major storm coming in the East Coast in D.C. It's supposed to be record-setting, and they've measured the moisture out of the storm clouds that are coming in, and it should be somewhere around 20 inches, and it's going to completely incapacitate D.C. And Mike McKay, maybe that's not a bad thing.
I was thinking that I had that same thought.
I stole it from you.
I'm sure somebody else has thought of it before both of us, to be honest with you. But yeah, slow down. What, you know, just give them a day off or something like that. But they were paralyzed the other night with an inch of snow.
Yeah.
And this all in anticipation of this big storm coming in. And so
these are the people we're hoping are going to solve all our problems. They get an inch of snow and everybody walks away from their car, right?
Yeah.
Did you read that? Some of the people just walked away from their cars because they didn't want to drive and just left them on the road?
Well, the worst is when you get that ice on the road and you can't even get through it. You could just slide to the side or something like that.
A little bit of black ice, yeah. And
a lot of it.
You're from the East Coast and you've seen many brutal storms over there.
I have.
And yet this is supposed to be a storm of storms.
Well, you know, the latest historic storm, I suppose. Well, if it's a big one, I guess it'll go down in history. So it's there by definition historic, right?
Everybody wants to be part of history. Now, how about the other storms brewing in D.C.?
Or in Iowa?
Yeah.
Or New Hampshire?
Yes.
On both sides of the aisle, it's going to be an interesting. We're finally getting close to some action now.
Yeah,
this past year, it's all been talk. Now there's some action.
The money's coming out. The bets are starting to get laid.
Yeah. That's the vitriol is starting to rise. And National Review came out with the magazine founded by William F. Buckley came out with a scathing article.
A stunning review. A stunning rebuke of
Ted
Trump.
Cruz. Donald Trump. I'm sorry.
Cruz is not popular either. And you're probably thinking back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier.
The article was about Donald Trump.
Everybody hates Cruz.
Yeah. And those are his best friends. Bob Dole came out the other day and said, anybody but Ted Cruz, you don't go on the floor of the Senate and call out your majority leader and call him a liar. You know, if you have a beef, you go in the office, you have those things behind doors, but you don't call your own majority leader a liar.
Exactly. So let's get into Trump a little bit, because I know that you've got some opinions here. At this point, what are your feelings? What's your hunches telling you the viability and his chances of being the party's nominee?
Well, one has to evolve, like Donald has evolved in his political beliefs. One has to evolve whether or not you think that, once the voting starts, he'll go away, because he just, he doesn't. He doesn't go away. And obviously, we'll see now whether or not he can run the table.
Okay, so Noah Millman writes this article. He's a conservative writer. He writes this article, a chance for, speaking of historic storms, for Trump to come in and run the table like never been done since the age of the primary, and like nobody has done outside of an incumbent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least we're getting to the point where we'll start to see the action. And it'll be interesting. You have the caucuses in Iowa, and very different set of dynamics going on there in Iowa than in most states, where you just go in and just push a button or pull a lever or something like that. But in Iowa, they have to sit around and argue for their peeps for about 3 or 4 hours, and then they come up with some sort of a consensus in each location. And
that's fascinating. That's a throwback to earlier days, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe we should be doing more of that.
Well, perhaps. People have to be passionate about their beliefs enough to actually go and make a case, and as opposed to just go into a booth and pull the curtain behind them. But at the same time, I would say that that process would also limit the amount of people who would go to those extreme, not extreme, it's not extreme, but go to those, make all that extra effort.
Yeah.
Whereas, so, well, you know, spend an evening arguing.
Maybe it would be like the Marines or the SEALs or something. The harder you make it, the more it's treasured, the more it's valued.
So do you think we should limit the vote as opposed to...
No, I don't think we should limit the vote, but there's got to be a way to... And this is just a fresh topic. I haven't even thought through it just since you started talking about it, how they did it in Iowa. But there's got to be a way to engage people more.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly a situation where people are very much engaged. So, but, I'm somewhat ambivalent about the whole idea of voting and who should vote and who should. Well, we should all exercise our right to vote. But at the same time, leading up to that, there is the responsibility to learn as much as you possibly can about your given candidates.
You're going to reach a certain point if you made it mandatory for voting. Just say that they decided to come along with that rule. Voting is so important, it's mandatory. You would reach a saturation point pretty quickly in terms of the number of people who actually were educated on the candidates and topics.
Well, I think that obviously when you look across our vast electorate, you know, there are people who are very educated and there are a lot of people who don't have a clue, and they just base their opinions, if they even are clued in enough to care one way or another. There's a lot of people that throw up their hands and say, politics, I don't want to have anything to do with it. You know,
too dirty.
Yeah. Or whatever. I'm just not interested. But you have a situation where, you know, people are studying the issues and so on. And I think we're better off, obviously.
All right. So, and I had asked you, you and I have been going back and forth about this for months, really. But do us a little handicapping on Hillary.
Well, Hillary Clinton obviously still leads quite a bit in the national polls. But now we're getting into that phase when the national polls mean nothing. Well, they really haven't meant a whole lot up to this point anyway, except for, you know, who's ahead in the race. But she has a huge challenge now in Iowa. The polls there she was ahead by points or so last month. Now she's behind by about 15 points or so in Iowa. And I think it's a similar situation in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire's 27 points. So if she loses Iowa and New Hampshire, are all bets off? Do you think that puts a pinhole in her balloon?
Well, a pinhole, yeah. But, you know, when you consider that O'Malley is really not a factor, it's just between her and Bernie Sanders, there's still a long race ahead. You know, one or two losses at the outset aren't necessarily going to undermine her entire campaign. But at the same time, he continues to gain traction and
what is it about him?
Energize younger people.
In your opinion, what is it about Sanders that is piquing the interest of the voters?
Well, I think that he comes across as a truly decent person who is also knowledgeable, who cares very much about his role and the country and so on. So I think his people are passionate because they just not only like what he has to say, but Gross is a truly, you know, decent person.
He's decent, and I was talking to another person, a prominent individual in the city yesterday, and I had asked them what their opinion was of Sanders and why Sanders was going up and what was going to happen. And this person, who happened to be a female, said that she thought that the party's in trouble if Sanders wins because who's going to vote for a socialist. But I countered with that and said, you know, I know a lot and have known a lot of Democrats in my life. And what they're enthusiastic about, and I think a lot of them are enthusiastic about what Sanders stands for.
I agree, and I think that when one uses the term socialism, I think it depends upon who's hearing it, what their thoughts are. You know, some people say socialism, ooh, that's analogous to communism, and so it's a dirty word in and of itself. Other people who are more concerned about social issues think in terms of socialism and that, you know, for the common good.
Yeah.
So it depends upon whose ears.
Folks, we're talking to Mike McKay here, the legend, the Mesilla Valley legend and my tormentor, I mean my mentor. But since he and I kind of go back and forth every morning before the show, I thought he might enjoy coming on and giving some of his opinions, and you might enjoy hearing them. But so is it a dream race, Trump and Clinton? Is that the dream race that we've been waiting for?
Or a nightmare? I don't know. It depends. Again, it depends upon your point of view. I think that there would be, if those were the two candidates, Donald Trump on the one side, Hillary Clinton, there would be a lot of people in this country, I think, who turned off to both of them.
Really?
Yes. Sure.
But what about just this, the spectacle, the bare knuckle brawl, you know? And it seems like as soon as Trump swung back, counterpunched against the sexism claim to Hillary, she started a free fall that has not stopped.
Well, I don't think necessarily the problems that she's having in either New Hampshire or Iowa, the two that are looming close, I think it has more to do with Bernie Sanders than Donald Trump and the sexism claim. But that's just, you know, my humble opinion on that. I don't think it was necessarily Donald Trump. I think it's Bernie Sanders that is making a difference in that particular campaign, at least at this point. But certainly Donald Trump has been amazing over these past 9-10 months or so,
in
the fact that he can say anything and people are outraged, and yet he seems to move ahead.
But how does he have a feeling for, you know, in this politically correct age, when certain things are so far outside of the bounds, and he brings them up, and he not only survives, he thrives? Where does he get that instinct? That, to me, is just almost miraculous.
Well, yeah, it is incredible. And you also have to think, how is the Donald, let's again go forward to the scenario where it's Trump versus Hillary Clinton, or Trump versus Bernie Sanders, for that matter. I think you'll see a very different person running in 2016 than you saw in 2015. You know, obviously, the politics change once it's a head-to-head battle, as opposed to people trying to gain the nomination in the primaries.
That's fair enough. Let's take a little break here. Can you stay for another session?
10 minutes. That's all I have. And then I've got to run.
Okay. We've got Mike McKay here, folks. AM Las Cruces. 1450 KOB, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 is your text. And we've got Glenn Fry's favorite Eagles song one of these nights. It's 619, and we're going to be coming back and picking Mike McKay's brain a little bit more. Well, we're here with Mike McKay. And so, Mike, let me just ask you, you threw out a nightmare scenario for conservatives and evangelicals who are supporting Donald Trump. You're suggesting it's just a show. It's just another one of his reality shows, and that it is quite possible that this guy is not a conservative at all.
Well, certainly he has changed dramatically. Lots of people. We were talking a little bit before the show about Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Ronald Reagan was a registered Democrat back in the 40s and early 50s, and then he started to evolve. I think by the time the 60s came along, he had genuinely evolved as a conservative.
Yeah.
And
no doubt.
But I just don't see that evolution from what I can observe. And it's just my opinion. I mean, obviously, it's subject for discussion, but he seems to be more likely to say anything he needs to say just to get a reaction or just to play to the folks.
Let's put it this way. He wouldn't avoid saying something if he thought it would be popular, right?
No, he wouldn't. I don't believe so. So you wonder what, and I'm sure I'm not alone, I'm sure many conservatives still wonder too, is he the real deal or not? The interesting thing about it is one of the first things that people say who like Donald Trump, they say, he's so honest. And that's the code word for he's not politically correct. I don't think they necessarily are always the same. You know, he'll say, I don't know if he really believes all that he says. He would have to go a ways, you know, to prove it to me.
All right. So here's my read on that. Here's the argument against it. Donald Trump for a long time was a businessman, and it wouldn't have maybe benefited him to be overly conservative in a place not like New York. But when you get down into his heart of hearts, what he believes, and maybe even beyond what he has practiced as a person,
mm-hmm.
you know, he might be in favor of one man, one woman, you know, one family. But in his real life, maybe much like many of these people that have gotten in trouble, evangelical leaders or whatever, the temptation was too great to avoid it. Then maybe he believes in one marriage. Maybe he believes in a lot of the things that he's talking about. It seems to me it would be stupid to run on a bunch of issues and then immediately try to turn the battleship around.
Well, we talked a little bit about this before, certainly, and this is typical. It's not just Donald Trump. It's not just 2015, 2016, yeah. But races tend to change
mm-hmm.
from the primary to the actual election and so on. And people do change their emphasis, not necessarily their value.
I'm going to throw out a quote here, that kind of a famous theory. The person who leads a revolution is not fit to be the president of a country, per se. So,
well, the skill set would be different, right?
Yeah, but would that apply here?
Well, you're saying he's leading the revolution.
He's got a revolution against the PC movement, and he's got a revolution against this kind of milquetoast, nice, just please accept this type of conservatism. The conservatives have long hoped that if they were just nice enough, they'd be accepted by the liberals, by the Democrats.
I hadn't picked up on that over the years.
There's not a tendency to be vicious in the party tends to have the Christians in it and everything. So and conservatism isn't generally associated with revolutions.
Well, the premise that because they have a lot of Christians, they don't tend to be malicious or nasty. I wouldn't accept that premise. And this is not an attack by any means on Christianity.
523-1450.
Individuals who call themselves Christians.
I know the guy that runs.
Can be very vicious.
I know the guy that manages this place. You better be careful, Mike.
Okay. All right.
But there has been a tendency to think that I think in the conservative movement, if they would just realize that we are sincere and we don't mean any harm, they'll accept us. And I think it's been a huge mistake. I think when you see Donald Trump swinging back, counterpunching, Mayweather became the greatest fighter in history, supposedly, by counterpunching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was more of a defensive fighter than an offensive fighter.
That's what Trump looks like to me, almost.
Ooh.
He doesn't go on the attack until somebody swings, and when he swings back, it's twice as hard.
I wouldn't characterize that in a way at all. He strikes out real quick, and everything is always so so base. I don't know. For example, this latest article about the National Review, thing he says about National Review, it's a failing paper. It's a bunch of crap, or something.
That's a counterpunch.
Well, it's a yeah, but. He doesn't. He just kind of makes really derogatory remarks about anybody that says, or any publication or any group that comes out.
He's from New York. What do you expect?
Well, I don't expect that. I'm from New York, too. And that's not the way I grew up.
All right. So if Trump gets in there and doesn't turn into a liberal, if he gets elected, it could be a new movement for the Conservative Party. You know, I don't know what the future holds. And so
again, I go back to the National Review, and they say, hey, decades of work by people who believe in conservatism would be undermined by him.
But how do they know
being
that?
The leader?
Do they know that?
How do we know anything? We have opinions, we have ideas, we have beliefs. We don't know. But that's what his behavior and what he says suggests to the editors of National Review.
All of the pundits up to this point have been wrong.
Well, all of them?
All of the ones who've written him off.
Well, certainly people have been surprised of how long he's gone and how he continues to maintain his lead. So, but now the proof will be in the pudding. This is 2016. We start to get down. We'll see. You know, obviously, things start to change now. But at the same time, there is that author that you mentioned who says he might run the table and
Noah Millman,
historic proportion.
Who are your, as far as you can tell right now, who are your two candidates, the Republican and the Democrat? Who's going to be in the race?
I still can't believe that ultimately, once the primaries start unfolding, that Donald Trump will maintain this lead. So it's anybody's guess. I don't know. Maybe Marco Rubio will survive, because there was a time that Donald Trump and Ted Cruz were playing nice to one another. They weren't picking up. Well, obviously those days are gone. So maybe they will knock one another off. I think that that's probably what the Republican establishment is hoping, that they might knock one another off. Neither of them, I think your rank and file Republican wants them at the head of their ticket. So maybe Marco Rubio will
squeak in,
perhaps
crawl in under the tent.
My
guess.
And I'd still say that probably Hillary will probably get the nomination as far as the Democrats are concerned.
In case you're dying to know who I think is going to be in there.
I am.
I believe it's going to be Trump versus a historically weakened Hillary Clinton.
Hmm. Well, weakened because of her run up to it.
Yes.
Actually, I disagree on that standpoint. I think that because it has been Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, I think it's helpful to a candidate. I think it strengthens a candidate to have a tough race. So I don't think she'll be weakened, especially when you consider, getting back to my point about Bernie Sanders being ultimately a very decent person. He has assiduously avoided personal attacks on Hillary Clinton. And so I don't think there would be, like when Mitt Romney came out of the thing after the Republican establishment wanted to change the whole process leading up to it, because felt that the brand was the attacks within the party become so damaging. I don't think we have that dynamic going on right now with the Democrats.
Perhaps not, but it's been a big mistake to limit the number of debates.
Well, there have been plenty of debates.
For the Democrats?
Well, yeah. I mean, sure. There have been several debates. There's going to be a town hall meeting with the three candidates coming this next Monday. This coming Monday. So it's a debate of a type when the three of them talking about their positions and so on.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you coming on this morning, Mike.
Always a pleasure, Kelly.
And I'm predicting President Trump. I think Trump is going to come through the end of the process.
I would like to ask you.
Yes.
Would you be very happy with that?
I've got to think about that question. I was disappointed. Somebody came up to me yesterday, a listener, and said, I can't believe how hard you're pulling for Trump. And I don't really feel like I've been pulling for Trump. I'm just kind of amazed. I'm standing here with my mouth open, watching him move, cut through the opposition like butter, and counterpunch. And he is so brilliant at attacking people that once he has laid down a line of attack on somebody, you can never forget it. And they almost always appear to be fatally wounded.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anything like it in my life.
I just can't imagine, frankly, a situation on the world stage when he's talking to other world leaders and his response to Vladimir Putin is, well, you just look stupid. You're stupid. You know, and that's the kind of typical response you get whenever he's attacked and so on, as opposed to on the merits of any particular
argument. That could be the Trump doctrine. Anytime we have a problem with a foreign leader, the first thing Trump does is officially name them stupid.
Yeah. And Vladimir, what else? You're ugly.
Talking to Mike McKay, who's now shifting gears and moving out of the studio, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell at 635-523-1450 to call in and 805-618-02 text. We'll be right back to, I'm going to give you some storm, a little bit of storm coverage here. We've got here a major storm, and there is supposed to be nothing like it in recent memory. And so trying to get you a clip here. It looks like there's a little bit of the network's a little bit screwed up here. So anyway, the upshot is that they're talking about the fact that when this storm was coming up basically through Louisiana and kind of the East Texas and, you know, Mississippi and stuff, the storm brought a lot of rain down there, and it came up through the center of the country and then is headed over to the East Coast. And the upshot was that there was a tremendous amount of moisture in these clouds. And so the moisture count was something like whatever 2.0 means, but it was like supposed to be 10 to 1. So they figure there's probably 20 inches of moisture, 20 inches of snow in these clouds, which I thought was pretty significant. And they're talking about, you know, people were going out and buying, you know, emptying the stores of milk and bread and everything. And that the upshot was that they could count on the fact that everything was going to be shut down in the particular area between New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., that's where it's going to be pretty bad. And so it's saying at the Weather Channel, tens of millions are preparing as the ingredients come together for Winter Storm Jonas to evolve into a crippling snowstorm later Friday. So it's going to be later today that it really kicks in. Conditions going downhill rapidly through Saturday with blizzard conditions, heavy ice accumulation, strong winds, and coastal flooding developing across the east. And as of Thursday night, more than 85 million people, or roughly one in every four Americans, in at least 20 states were covered by either a blizzard watch, blizzard warning, winter storm watch, winter storm warning, and winter weather advisory, or freezing rain advisory from Arkansas to the Carolinas to the New York City area. And they think that New York City could get up to 8 inches. So there could be just a lot of places that are shut down, and kind of going through this here. Foot of snow from eastern Kentucky into a large part of West Virginia, Virginia, Maryland, D.C., northern Delaware, parts of Pennsylvania, western North Carolina, and amounts exceeding 2 feet are possible in parts of West Virginia, Virginia, and Maryland in the District of Columbia, and then 6 inches in a lot of these other areas and then damaging ice accumulations in a lot of these areas too. So, and you know, when you have the ice buildup, you a lot of times will have the, you know, trees coming down, tree limbs, and ice buildup. If it's on the telephone lines or the power lines, can bring down these poles as well. So it should be an extraordinary storm. Let's take a little break here, and I'll see if I can get some of these stories to work for you. But speaking of which, here's some local weather. 643 Kelly O'Connell Show, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And that's 523-1450 or 805-6180 to text. All right, so here's a I had to basically reboot the system for you, but here's a clip. Dangerous winter storm Jonas to bring crippling snowstorm, et cetera. Here we go.
New York City now joins the list of blizzard warnings in effect for this weekend's crippling storm. New York City, Philadelphia has been added in this blizzard warning category for this weekend. D.C. is already in it along with Baltimore. Now, we have all these winter storm warnings and advisories stretching all the way back to the south. Millions of people are affected by this storm system as it continues to climb up the coast. Now, we're looking for the worst of this storm arriving in D.C. with blizzard conditions by tonight and tomorrow. Philadelphia, tomorrow you're going to be in on the blizzard conditions as well with New York. And as the system continues to climb up the coast, winds will be severe, and that's why we're seeing these blizzard warnings. Snow will also be crippling. Still looking at the highest amounts in and around the D.C. area. Philadelphia should make it to the foot mark at least. Lesser snow amounts as you move further north, but still the impacts will be crippling.
All right, so pretty amazing. And here is D.C., Baltimore.
Well, this doggy in Baltimore, Maryland, he's having fun now. He has no idea, but a foot more of fun is headed his way by the end of this weekend with this major storm system. Now, let's break down the snow totals. How much can you expect? And we're going to take it area by area. Now, remember, these are estimates. They can go down or up just a bit, but want to give you a general idea. we are looking at feet of snow in and around the D.C. area. So close to 2 feet right now expected in the Washington area. Northwest, though, isolated higher amounts. So we could get close to that 3 foot mark. Baltimore, very impressive. We're talking a foot or more, close to 2 feet in a lot of places. Eastern Shore, a little bit less. Philadelphia is going to come in over that foot mark as it looks right now. And that's going to be pretty much for in and around the Philadelphia area. Now, as we move up the coast, the snow totals are going to get a little less, but still very impressive. So New York, we should have over 6 inches here, and Long Island, you're going to be looking at that as well. As you go further north into Connecticut, that's when the snow totals start to get a lot less.
All right, and here's just a little bit on this ice aspect of this storm.
Winter Storm Jonas is arriving, and here are the four things you need to know. Now, timing will be everything with this storm because we are now looking at blizzard warnings from Washington extending all the way up to New York. And we're going to see those blizzard conditions start to arrive by Friday evening for Washington and Baltimore as it pushes up into Philly late Friday night into Saturday morning and then New York on Saturday. So we are talking a lot of snow with this system, but also blowing and drifting snow with severe winds, which means visibility will be down to zero at times. Ice will be a significant impact, and this is going to be basically out through the Ohio Valley and parts of the Southeast. Charlotte, you were looking at a crippling ice event setting up for Friday night into Saturday. Now, this is the type of ice which will cause major power outages, also crippling the roads. Coastal flooding will be worse at high tide with this storm, and of course, snow totals will be significant. So we are looking at possible record snowfall through parts of D.C., Philadelphia getting in over a foot, and New York close to a foot.
All right. So, and I was mentioning the impact of the ice, and obviously ice is a lot heavier than snow, but they were saying in Charlotte it was half an inch to 3/4 inch thickness of ice. I mean, that would do a lot of damage. All right, we'll take a little break here and come back and finish her off. And I plan to get more into the Trump and Hillary and some of the other political issues. And we also have some local news coming up. Okay, we have just a couple of minutes left, and not a lot of calls. I don't know if how much you enjoyed Mike and my sparring back and forth, but I guess not much sparring happened. But here is a report from Robert Gates, who is formerly the head of defense, who says Hillary Clinton's server was certainly plundered by China and Russia, et cetera, Iran. Check this out. Is anything ever going to happen with Hillary's situation, with her emails, with her private server, all these different things? Check this out.
Involved in the presidential race. But are you surprised by the news that continues to come out about the former Secretary of State's server and the fact that the Intelligence Community Inspector General has said there was a lot of very highly classified information on her server?
Yeah, that's a concern for me. I never used email when I was head of CIA or head of the Department of Defense. As I used to joke, I didn't want to have some chief of station overseas email me and say he was going to do something if I didn't get back to him in 3 hours, and I would get back from a 5-hour hearing to discover I was 2 hours too late. I preferred dealing with people face to face and putting a signature on a piece of paper on matters of real national security importance.
One of your colleagues, Mike Morrell, said on this program, or actually agreed with my assertion that almost certainly Russian, Chinese, and Iranians had compromised the homebrew server of the former Secretary of State. He agreed with that. Do you agree with his assessment of my assessment?
Well, given the fact that the that the Pentagon acknowledges that they get attacked about 100,000 times a day, I think the odds are pretty high.
And so if they had real-time access to her server, would that have compromised national security?
Well, again, it would depend entirely on what she put on there. And I haven't read any of these emails, so I don't know what was on those servers.
Hi, this is Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for stopping by my YouTube channel.
All right. So anyway, that's Hugh Hewitt. He's a pretty conservative blogger. But anyway, so the question that I have is, what should be done about Hillary Clinton if she, in building her own server to be able to be more in control of her communications, I guess, accidentally or on purpose compromise national security? Should anything be done to her? Should something that is done to her wait until after the election so that it doesn't tip the election? Should, if she's going to be indicted, should she be indicted now? You know, should she be indicted and removed as a candidate? Should she, you know, should they indict her and say this doesn't really have anything to do with the presidency, and you know, we're not looking at jail time or anything, but we wanted to address this. And there are obviously other issues out there which she is involved with, including, I guess, Benghazi. And there's a new article that's just come out this morning that I saw that said they've got evidence that both Obama and Hillary lied about Benghazi. And one of the things that I've never been able to understand is why nobody really has ever talked about what Obama was doing. And we've got a phone call during Benghazi. We have a phone call here. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. We just got a few seconds.
Kelly, this is Jerry. Yes, she should be indicted. There is a law. I can't remember if it's 18 or if it's 8741.
Doesn't matter, but thanks a lot. We got to go. Call back in the next hour. All right, folks, we'll come back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450, and we'll be right back after a break on the hour to pick this up again.
You got your demons, you got your diet, I got a few of my own.
All right, so it's 7:06. Today is the 22nd, and I see that we have 28 degrees outside right now. 58's the high, 25 the low tonight. So it's been a little bit chilly the last night and today from what it had been a few days ago. Okay, so there is a little bit of news for you. Sergio Carrillo, Sunland Park City Councilor, he is seeking to unseat Sunland Park's current mayor has a beef with Doniana County Sheriff's deputies because he claims they illegally searched and seized his vehicle and intentionally harassed him during his arrest in September on misdemeanor drug charges. And he makes those claims in a tort claims notice sent to Doniana County Clerk's office. And he was elected to represent Sunland Park District 4 in 2012 and was arrested September 28th, 2015 by sheriff's deputies during a city council meeting, charged with possessing less than 1 ounce of marijuana and drug paraphernalia. He sent the tort claims notice, which is a preliminary to launching a lawsuit, but it doesn't appear that he's started his lawsuit yet. And it says, the paper says, this is from the Sun News. It's unclear if he will file again. Mr. Carrillo has not made a decision at this time on when or even if a civil suit will be filed. Carrillo's attorney, Jess Lilly of Las Cruces, said so. Lilly is representing Carrillo on the criminal case. And when he was arrested, deputies were called out to an incident involving suspicious circumstances in Santa Teresa shortly after 4:30 p.m., according to the documents. And a resident called in authorities to report two people digging and possibly burying something in the 100 block of Kite Court. And they appeared to have a black bag in their possession. A deputy found two individuals plus a third inside a parked vehicle, according to court records. The driver, later identified as Carrillo, turned on the vehicle and began to drive away as deputies approached, but they eventually made contact with him. And it says, the complaint says, as soon as the driver lowered his driver's side window, a large cloud of burned marijuana smoke exited the vehicle and into the deputy's face. Sounds like something from a Cheech and Chong movie. And they asked him to step outside of the vehicle. Carrillo did not give consent. And here they say, quote, Carrillo insisted that we were breaking the law and decided to remain on the scene while the deputies obtained a search warrant, according to court documents. And a search warrant was obtained at 10:35, and by 10:44, the deputies began searching the vehicle, completed after midnight. And they found a number of drugs and drug-related items, according to the report, in the vehicle, including the following: a silver container that contained half of a burned cigarette described as a roach, quote, unquote, wrapped in, quote, strawberry zigzag paper, two zigzag paper packages with a strawberry emblem, a glass cup with burned residue that contained, quote, two burned marijuana cigarettes in the same strawberry zigzag paper, a glass water pipe that contained burned marijuana residue, a glass pipe that had also burned marijuana residue in it, as well as a small amount of marijuana, a marijuana grinder that contained marijuana residue, and a folded piece of paper that contained less than 1 ounce of unburned marijuana. And then the police got arrest warrants for all three. And, quote, deputies asked to speak with Carrillo and immediately placed him under arrest. He was booked into Doniana County Detention Center and released several hours later after posting a $1,500 cash bond. Quote, it is not typical for the sheriff's department to request warrants on these type of charges, and my arrest during the meeting was done to intentionally harass and embarrass me, he put in his tort claims notice. And in that letter, he wrote that a passenger in my vehicle had smoked marijuana, and he doesn't admit that he smoked marijuana. He also wrote that the deputies, quote, falsely accused me and my passengers of burying something in the desert and claimed that they illegally seized his vehicle. Court documents and incident report do not mention a vehicle seizure. Under county policy, officials are not allowed to comment on pending lawsuits. And on Thursday, Lilly said Carrillo's criminal case is, quote, on the standard docket process in magistrate court. There was a pretrial hearing that took place on Thursday, and Lilly said that the parties request settings in early April for a docket call and jury selection. And Mr. Carrillo looks forward to having the magistrate court case resolved in his favor. And earlier this month, Carrillo announced he would challenge Sunland Park Mayor Javier the Javelina Perea for the city's top job. In December, the case against Medina and Arellano, his passengers who faced the same charges, were dismissed by Magistrate Judge Beverly Singleman. Online court records show. And records show that the cases were dismissed because of a failure to prosecute, which means that the state or the officers did not show up. And by the way, in case you didn't know, Jess Lilly is a superb lawyer. So he's got a good person to represent him. Okay, so, and we also have a notice about the service today for Miguel Silva, a visitation and rosary service for former Las Cruces City Councilor and Doña Ana County Commissioner Miguel Silva begins at 6 p.m. today at St. Albert the Great Newman Center, 2615 South Solano Drive, and a rosary will be conducted at 7 p.m. At 10 a.m. Saturday, a funeral mass for Silva will be celebrated at the Newman Center. And he died Sunday, and as you undoubtedly heard, he had, according to the investigators, had committed suicide, and he had served for 8 years from November 2007 until November 2015 as the elected representative for District 1 on the city council, and also ran for mayor. And in 2000, Silva was appointed a Doña Ana County Commissioner and served for a little more than a year for the county's District 2, which included much of southern Doña Ana County. And he was also a former recycling coordinator for the city. So anyway, sad days. We all loved Miguel. Anyway, so we'll take a little break here and then come back and dig back down into some of these political stories. But 7:14 on the 22nd of January, 1450 KOB, AM Las Cruces, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 and 805-6180 is your text. All right, here's a little bit on the idea that the Republicans caused Trump to occur. And this is from Joy Reid. Republicans brought this on by ignoring conservatives and immigration. The immigration deal was a deal breaker.
Get that National Review cover up in a full screen once again. I need to have it up here while we talk about this. I got to, Joy, you look at that. Is it possible that Donald Trump simply purchased that as a front page ad as his answer to Ted Cruz's accusation that he's the leader of the establishment?
Well, you know, he couldn't have done better if he had. You know, I think it's interesting, and it's interesting listening to Tom Davis and the others talk about it, because there really is this sense that, as Bruce Bartlett told me, the former Republican turned independent, that for 30 or 40 years, you've had the elites of the Republican Party amass a large enough coalition to pass the things that the elites wanted, namely very low taxes for themselves and deregulation for their businesses. And they assembled a large enough coalition by essentially feeding blue-collar white voters everything from evangelicalism and supporting them in terms of their religious faith and promising them that they would legislate around that, promising them that they would legislate around social issues that were important to them, promising that they would beat back the liberal, creeping liberalizing of the culture. by feeding them, even with their deep down gut feelings that there was something really inherently wrong with Barack Obama. And they've been able to hold that together with the help of the entertainment complex that's a part of the conservative movement, with the help of movement conservatives. Immigration is where the bargain just broke down. And the base of the party is no longer willing to go along with any part of the elite, not the movement conservatives, not the moneyed elite part of the party. They're just not willing to go along with it. Immigration was the deal breaker, and they are gone. They cannot be brought back into the pen, not even by the mighty National Review. None of the people who are voting for Trump are going to read that. They're not going to listen to those people. They are not listening.
All right, let's listen to Lindsey Graham today.
Who cares about Lindsey Graham? Lindsey Graham is a guy that just kind of sucked up to John McCain, and that's his the greatest thing that he ever did in his career, so nobody wanted to vote for him. But I'm sure Lindsey Graham has a lot of great qualities that nobody's ever heard of. But all right, so where is this race headed? 523-1450. I see that Trump is going to go in there. I just think he's got a ton of support from people that have felt disenfranchised. And by disenfranchised, I guess what I mean is people who feel like nobody cares about their opinion, that they've been kind of left behind in the culture of the political process, and are angry to see what's going on in the culture, the immigration, all of the stuff. No matter where you would point fingers, immigration is one of the issues. But I think, you know, the Middle East policy is another one. But the economy is probably driving what's going on here more than anything, because, you know, a lot of these people, they say these white disenfranchised voters feel like they've been basically demonized for everything that's been wrong in America since the beginning. And now, you know, they're kind of left outside, left out in the rain, whatever you want to call it. So what are the people who hate Donald Trump's guts? What do they think? Here's the people who took part in this National Review anti-Trump special book. You know, the sad thing to me is these people could have put their time into getting better candidates involved, and instead, you know, they wait till somebody who shows up who seems to have real appeal and attack him. I am not standing here or sitting here, as the case may be, telling you that Trump is going to be a perfect candidate or a perfect president. I'm just amused at how he attacks people, the kind of people that usually get away with doing whatever they want, the Hillary Clintons and such. He attacks them and makes them look like fools. It seems like a brand new day in the political process. Check this out, though. These are the people that published this anti-Trump manifesto.
People contributing to the conservative campaign to stop Donald Trump: Dana Lash, the host of Dana on the Blaze TV; Brent Bazell, the chairman of the group For America, that's the nation's largest online conservative network; and Katie Pavlich, who's a Fox News contributor and news editor of townhall.com. Dana, let me start with you. Glenn has got the first piece in this. You also add your two cents, saying you were on the lines with the Tea Party, standing with the placards out on the sidewalks. You didn't see Donald Trump there.
Now, and Megan, you know, to that point, I was on that first phone call the night that we were all, a group of us, were planning the first Tea Party rallies and founding the modern day Tea Party movement. I didn't stand out, I didn't phone bank, and I didn't go door to door for an increased mandate for ethanol. I didn't do it for eminent domain. I did it for principles over popularity. And when I'm looking at this primary, I feel as though that a lot of this has turned into popularity over principles. That's what conservatism is. It's principle. I know Donald Trump. I think he's a nice guy. I think he's got a fantastic family. But that's not enough, to me anyway, to win over the White House. I want someone who's a great leader and is a staunch conservative, and I don't have to question their authenticity.
Brent, you know what's happening right now. A lot of Trump supporters are watching this saying, these people are establishment. They don't get it. We just want someone who can go in there and screw with Washington the way they feel their lives have been messed with.
Look, Megan, anyone who knows me knows I was fighting the establishment well before fighting the establishment was cool. I was fighting the establishment with the Buchanan Brigades in 1992. So why are we speaking out about this? To suggest that Trump has had some kind of road to Damascus transformation just isn't true. Look, Ronald Reagan spent 16 years working for conservative principles, giving speeches, traveling around the country, raising money for conservative organizations, supporting Barry Goldwater, doing all those things that advanced the conservative movement for decades before he ran for president.
All right. I find this kind of boring because it's all going to be the same thing that Trump is not a conservative, and you get the point that these people are making. Whether it's true or not, maybe it is true. All right. Let's just say that Trump is not a conservative. For the sake of the argument, although he's used conservative ideas and principles to get support of the party, is it possible that he would govern as a conservative because that's what the people are dying to get? I mean, it is possible that he's converted, but I take for possibility that he's not a true conservative. That doesn't mean that he wouldn't govern as a conservative, although it doesn't mean that he would. But my thinking is that if he's tapped into this vein and he's got enormous support for it, and the more he goes in this direction, the more support he gets, what would keep him from being the kind of a politician that America was meant to elect, which was a person who represents other people's opinions? I mean, it's representative government, right? It's not supposed to be somebody coming in like the present occupant of the White House, who has this vision, this beautiful vision, this wonderful vision of utopia, and he's going to do everything that he can to bring this forward, no matter how much resistance, no matter how much disaster results. That theory of government is failed upon, it was born dead. There was never supposed to be that kind of leadership in the country, and that's one of the reasons that this president has struggled so much. Number one, socialism is false. All of the historical attempts to create a socialist empire have failed. Communism, Marxist, whatever, however you want to spin it. But the American style of government is perpetually comes back into bloom every time it's tried, because representing what people really want, as much as you might want to attack the average person on the street, is the form of government that we have. Anyway, here's Charlie Hurt, who writes for the Washington Times and some other publications, and he's saying, where was the outrage from these people over amnesty, bank bailouts, et cetera? Check this out.
Everyone who signed that letter, they're all friends of mine, and they're good people.
Let me adjust the sound on this so I don't blow your ears out. But The other person in this conversation besides Megyn Kelly, is Roger Stone, who used to be the leader, who used to be the head of Trump's campaign and still does a little advocacy for him.
Everyone who signed that letter, they're all friends of mine and they're good people, but they're purists. There's plenty of red meat, conservative red meat.
I think this is going off the charts for the audio, so I'm going to pull that off. But anyway, here is a little bit of O'Reilly on this issue. Is Trump a bad person? Is he a fake conservative?
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Hysteria surrounding Donald Trump. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. If you are following the presidential sweepstakes, you know that Donald Trump is dominating media coverage, especially on TV. The guy is ratings gold and not boring, so he's on camera a lot. That being said, much of the commentary on Trump is negative.
Now, the screamers and the crazy people on the alt-right, as they call it, who love Donald Trump, who have plenty of Hitler iconography in their Twitter icons.
I've been part of that when they just use a blanket statement to talk about black people, mm-hmm. or when they use a blanket statement to talk about white people or women or any other group. I don't think that's America. I don't want it to be America. Maybe it's time for me to move.
He plays a race card, obviously. And he did it with Mexicans. He's doing it with Muslims. He did it before he even thought about running for president with African Americans. I mean, that's part of who Trump is.
So with all the media attention, Trump's taken his lumps in the free marketplace of speech. But apparently that is not enough for the Trump haters. There is a new group called Stop Hate, Dumb Trump that is trying to intimidate the media. According to Eve Ensler, a playwright who is part of the group, the campaign intends to, quote, put the media and political institutions on notice that they are accountable for normalizing Trump's extremism by treating it as entertainment, by giving it inordinate and unequal airtime, and by refusing to investigate, interrogate, or condemn it appropriately. Wow. That sounds like a threat from Ms. Ensler, does it not? She, of course, is a rabid feminist. Others in the group, far-left folks Harry Belafonte, Danny Glover, Kerry Washington, Rosie O'Donnell, Michael Moore, Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin. Now, we actually applaud Americans who hold deep, honest political convictions on both sides. But there is much more to this Stop Hate group than most people know. Jane Fonda's politics are obvious, and the other celebrities are well known for their liberal viewpoints. But two lesser known names within the group are instructive. Noam Chomsky and Kimberly Crenshaw. Chomsky, a radical college professor who for decades has tried to smear his own country. For example, he questioned the credibility of the press reporting atrocities committed by the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia in the aftermath of the Vietnam War. He said the reports were propaganda to put the United States in a more favorable light. Later, Chomsky had to acknowledge that genocide did occur in Cambodia and was committed by communists with whom Chomsky is sympathetic. The nutty professor also blamed the USA for the 9/11 attacks partially, calling America a, quote, leading terrorist state. So why would you live in a terrorist state, professor? I'm just asking. Talking Points is amazed that Ms. Fonda, Ms. O'Donnell, and others believe Donald Trump's a far-out guy, a hater, but apparently are fine with Noam Chomsky. He's not a hater? Come on, he hates America. Now on to Kimberly Crenshaw. She teaches at UCLA and the Columbia School of Law here in New York City. She's highly critical of one President Barack Obama. The reason? Mr. Obama launched the My Brother's Keeper initiative that mentors young black men in bad neighborhoods. Ms. Crenshaw objects to that because women of color are not included in the program. The teacher was also part of the legal team that tried to destroy Clarence Thomas. So you can see what this dumb Trump group is all about, a bunch of radical leftists who apparently believe they can say pretty much anything, attack anyone, smear their own country, and all of that is okay. However, Donald Trump's opinion, not okay. And if we in the media report it, they're going to get us or something. Now, the factor is extending an invitation to most of the people in the anti-Trump group. We are happy to debate them here. But the odds of Jane Fonda showing up on the factor, about 1 million to 1. Over her life, Ms. Fonda has been an emotional person, often lashing out against her country in bizarre ways. She has apologized for her conduct during the Vietnam War, openly helping the enemy while Americans are being killed in Southeast Asia. Talking Points accepted Ms. Fonda's apology because that is the Judeo-Christian thing to do. But I don't believe Jane Fonda has learned any lessons at all. If she believes Noam Chomsky is not a hater, then she's out of her mind. Chomsky makes Trump look like Mother Teresa.
All right. So anyway, you get the gist of that. Let's take a little break here. Not getting any calls. I think I'm going to switch gears here. I've got a little bit of science for you. 523-1450, if there's anything in this that you appreciate. Playing the last day here, Hotel California, that Glenn Frey, who just passed away from the Eagles, helped write, considered one of the greatest songs in American history, American pop history, that is, rock and roll history. 7:34. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. Kelly's going to 523 1450 805 6180. I'm going to have to check my texter in just a moment here for your messages in a bottle, so to speak. We'll be right back.
Hi, Kelly. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hold on. I got another call. Hold on. I'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
Good morning. This is Tony. How are you?
Hey, good, Tony. Hold on. I've got another person that just called in. I'll be right back. Hold on 1 second. Tony, what are we going to talk about?
We're going to talk about the fact that it's Donald Trump hands down right now, period.
Okay, I'll put you on hold. I'll be back just probably after 1 minute. I got one caller after you, but I'll bring you on first, okay?
All right.
Thanks. Hey, is this Karen? What are we going to talk about?
Well, real quick, I don't have time to talk today. I just sent you a link, and it describes everything that Donald Trump is doing it was an essay from 1996. It describes everything that's happening with the Trump campaign that was they wanted Buchanan to do it to drop saying conservative and just talk about what the hell's happening in our country. And it's Trump. It's the Trump campaign.
Is it good?
So it's really, really good. I sent you the link. I'm listening. I just don't have time to talk today. If you can't pull up that link, I'll send it again.
I'll come
back and tell you who read it.
I got it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks.
Kelly O'Connell.
All right, folks, just when I thought I was lost, Tony called in to save the day. Tony, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir.
How you doing today?
Doing pretty good. There's a couple of points I'd like to make here regarding the nominations here.
Okay.
Number one, if Trump wins Iowa, it's game over.
All right. Why do you say that?
The voters of Iowa are pretty much a template of the United States at large, generally speaking. The only problem Trump's going to have is a money problem once he gets so far along, believe it or not.
How so?
It's going to cost close to $1 billion before it's all said and done.
Well, isn't Trump taking in some money maybe a little bit in a shy manner? I can't imagine a businessman like him saying, I'm not going to take any money.
Trump's going to have to take in money. Right now, it's to his advantage that he's not taking in money because he's saying he can't be bought. But as this thing wears on, if he destroys Cruz, destroys him within the next month or so, then it's smooth sailing.
Tony, let me ask you something. Have you ever seen anybody with more skills than this guy in terms of verbal combat?
Absolutely not.
How do you explain it?
This is the explanation of it. It's called the whole TV thing that they have now. What is it? Reality TV. That's what it is, period.
So he's been training for 10, 20 years for this?
I would say that he has been training for quite some time for this. And he is the master of the soundbite. Here's the deal with Trump. Here's the deal with Trump. How do you debate a man that doesn't acknowledge the rules?
Right. That's tough for anybody.
There are no rules for him. They don't apply to him. And so, like I said, if he can destroy Cruz, and he just released a attack ad this morning with Cruz that made him look awful, terrible, incompetent, the whole nine yards, trying to explain his position on illegal immigration.
All right.
And I think that's going to sink Cruz's boat. And to Hillary, I think Bernie's going to win New Hampshire, if Bernie wins Iowa, if he wins Iowa as well as New Hampshire, Hillary has one prayer to throw up, and she better hope it lands on its feet.
Does she have a chance, in your opinion? We're talking about a guy that went after Hillary for maybe 1 week on one topic, and she seems to me to have been devastated by that. Does she have any chance against this guy? Hillary seems like she's so clumsy.
This is the difference. This is the difference, Mr. O'Connell. If you look at Bernie, Bernie's passionate. He's sincere. He's been the same Bernie from day one. If you look at Trump, Trump knows how to ride the wave. Trump is having fun. He's just a rich guy having fun, okay? Trump looks like he's having fun. Hillary looks like she's doing a hostage video.
Well,
seriously, think about
Tony, you know, when there was an article I read last night, Hillary flies into Texas. There's only six people waiting for her for whatever, you know, they want a soundbite or they want a little chat with her. She ignores them. She is just a complete, she's devastatingly bad with people.
Absolutely. And here's the biggest point with Hillary, and don't miss this, because I guarantee you're going to see this. I guarantee it. Hillary needs the endorsement of one man to win South Carolina.
Obama.
No, absolutely no. This one man gave the election to Obama the last time around.
All right, go ahead.
A man named Jim Clyburn.
Clyburn, is he going to give her his? For folks who don't know, Clyburn is an elected official out of that state, and he's African-American, and he's very influential.
If Jim Clyburn does not, if Hillary loses, New Hampshire's lost. Forget about New Hampshire. If Hillary loses Iowa, the only, she's pinning all her hopes on South Carolina, and if Clyburn does not endorse her openly in South Carolina, she can forget it. Game over.
Well, how, you know, she's lost a lot of according to Mike McKay, she lost traction because of Sanders. But I think it all started, I was tracking the polls. It started when Trump went after her and her husband, as she empowered her husband to take advantage of women. It seemed like she's been falling since then.
That's correct. She's got Bill out there as a surrogate. They collectively have taken the black vote for granted. If you start to notice the people in the background of some of Bernie Sanders' speeches, that crowd is beginning to change colors.
Interesting.
Sanders, South Carolina spokesperson, his national spokesperson, okay, his national press secretary, is a black woman from South Carolina. And I'm going to tell you something, like I've said, if Hillary does not get the endorsement of Jim Clyburn, she can pull the plug and go make millions getting buzzed over.
That's good. Tony, I've got to go. Anything else?
That's all.
Thanks for the call. Great call. Talk to you later. All right. I got a call from Karen. She didn't have time to chat, but I'm going to come back and bring up her issue. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, KOBE 523-1450. Yeah, I'm going to check your 805-6180 text in just a second, and I'm going to try to do a lightning round on science in the last segment. So we'll see how that works. We'll be right back. Poor Glenn Frey, he died from taking too many pain pills for his too much aspirin and stuff for his arthritis, and it really came back to haunt him. Anyway, we'll be back just in a moment. Here's your weather.
Welcome to the Hotel California.
All All right. So Karen sent me an article that I'm trying to pull up here. Now my little laptop is freezing up here, so there must be something about this. Let me play you a clip from this upcoming NFL weekend while I try to get this thing unstuck. But here is your NFL games. Who's going to win? What do you guys think? Broncos, Patriots, Arizona Cardinals versus the Panthers. The Panthers are the top team this season. Check this out.
America's oil refineries and natural gas plants are doing their part.
You know, producing I got rid of this ad already. Came back to haunt me. Anyway, we've got this in a second. Super Bowl 50, who's going to win?
Conference Championship Sunday brings out the best of the best. The one seed versus the two seed in the AFC and the NFC with Super Bowl berths on the line. If the AFC game were in New England, you'd think it'd be a Patriots blowout. They're healthy, the Broncos aren't, and Peyton Manning's receivers can't catch the ball. But while Tom Brady is still at the top of his game, Denver's not his favorite place to play. He's 2-6 in the Mile High City, including a loss just 2 months ago to Brock Osweiler. Brady Manning 17 may be the last before Peyton lifts off into the sunset, but if the Broncos D can dirty Brady's uniform the way the Chiefs couldn't, it could still turn out to be a classic. The NFC Championship is the first ever playoff game between two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks. Carson Palmer won his when Cam Newton was in seventh grade, but the old man rolls into Charlotte with all kinds of offensive weapons and a coach who will call any pass play at any time. The Panthers have won 12 in a row at home, including...